This is Able Chat. Where we discuss news, topics and services in your local community regarding disabilities and the NDIS.
Able Chat is about disability. Able Chat is about health. Able Chat is about your community.
Welcome to Able Chat, 89.32 GLA, and of course the radio network right across Australia. It's great to have you here tonight, amongst a little bit late, but we're on air, and that's all that matters. Of course, what a wonderful week we've had this week, in which, you know, a whole lot is happening during Pride Month here in Sydney and across Australia, in which we celebrate the pride of people and the pride of culture. And I say that with just that a lot of people just always think that Pride Month is just a GLBTIQ plus community event. But effectively, there is a whole lot that fits under Pride right across Australia in all different circles. It could be Pride of culture. It could be Pride of relationships and family. And it's a recognition that anyone can be a little bit on the fun side and take life at full horns and, of course, and enjoy what you do. And this is a great way to recognise it. It's also been a wonderful way of reaching out to different organisations. Over the long weekend, of course, I attended a wonderful event which was all about autism pride. So it was actually Autism Pride Week, I think, last week, over the long weekend. And I attended an event in the city, which we talked about autism in all different areas. We it first started in Melbourne and then came up to Sydney. And it was a day where we talked about autism in media and the way it's represented in a whole lot of different ways of what people see as autism. And it was quite interesting talking to one of the specialists that was there about how autism is perceived on TV and the way it's recognised as typically a white male that is either a supercharged hero, I think was the words, as they said, that if you had autism, you were automatically super brainy and smart and you could save the world, or you're the other way where you could basically not have a conversation and you're in your own different world and couldn't cope. And they were saying that how media has really recharged and supercharged these type of characters, quite often not played by someone that has autism. And I thought it was interesting because a lot of the guests there that were at the conference generally were all successful, creative individuals that have senior roles in organisations and corporates, and also in the media as well. And yet, you know, unless they were specifically telling you, oh yes, look, I do have autism, you would have no concept or idea that that would be the case. And I think it's really interesting when you look at that side of the coin. Some other conversations that we did have during the period, which were super interesting, was that we talked about how workplace employment was definitely changed in that spectrum of how people on the spectrum should be more accommodated and seen in a workplace, considering that most of them only need some very small adjustments to be able to do some senior part roles. There was a whole lot of stuff. Plus, we talked to some friends that run a website which is all about autism as well, on Spectrum Australia, and I think that was super interesting as well. So, you know, all I could say is what I got take away from that wonderful day is that no matter who you are or where you are, there are people around you that may have autism that you don't know, and it's time that we don't judge. And that's something that we can consider part of in our Pride Week, I suppose, is because everyone is a creative, wonderful individual in some way, and it's just a matter of entrapping that beauty that we have on the inside to let it shine and be seen and be a part of it, you know. Tonight I am going to chat to a specialist, which is supercharged in the sense of that they do a whole lot in the GLBTIQ community. And I'm very excited about it because they have a wonderful website that they've been working on. And it really is... I think it's an amazing place to go, especially if you're young, you're trying to understand yourself and who you are and where you are. I'm not going to give too much away because I think it's something that we need to talk about to understand, but we've got the lovely Catherine Londis joining us from LGBTIQ. health.org.au and to talk about the whole project that's been going on there. And I'll be getting her on the program very shortly. We've also been lining up some wonderful conversations. I don't know if you heard our program last week where we had a wonderful conversation all about the space of transport and NDIS being... A space where we need to look at people getting from point A to point B. And if you did miss that, don't worry. You can simply go to the ablechat.com.au website, and there is a podcast of last week's program. And also there is a recap of all that chat as well. You can listen to us on demand. Simply just go to the 893 2GLF website as well. Just to get us started tonight, well, you know, you can never have too much boogie-woogie-woogie. And, I can say you can call on me to get us started. This is Annie B. It's great to have you here. Sounds like a wedding song already in whole, doesn't it? It's fantastic. You've been listening to Sandy V here at Able Chat, of course, each and every week where we do talk to some specialists. And tonight, well, I'm a little bit, I've got the butterflies effect happening. I don't know if you ever get that. It's one part shivering because I'm a little bit cold. But on the other part, I'm super excited to have my next guest, which is the lovely Kat, who is all the way from Our Voices LGBTIQ. Well, we should look. I'm not going to go into it. Let me just get her off hold so we can get her on air, and she can tell us everything we need to know. Are you there, Kat?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Oh, look, it's lovely to have you, Kat. I'm so glad that you've had the time to join me tonight. I've sort of been backwards and forwards trying to get hold of someone from you guys, because not only is it super exciting being Pride Month, where I get a little bit of excitement because being an entertainer, I've done a lot of Pride Months in my life, and I've also been performing through the Pride Month as well. And so this sort of is just amazing that we were able to sort of join about about your project that you and all the team have been working on. Tell me all about it. What's it all about?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have a chat about the project. It's called Our Voices, Our Lives, Our Way, which is a bit of a mouthful, so we shorten it to OVLO.
Right.
The OVLO Project. So it's quite a big one. There's quite a lot that we've done with this project. And so I guess for a little bit of background, it was developed as a joint initiative by LGBTIQ Plus Health Australia, which is the organisation that I work at,
yeah.
and the National Ethnic Disability Alliance.
Right.
So it came out, it came about because the organisation sort of identified that LGBTIQ plus people with disability have really sort of like specific intersectional needs that just weren't being met by resources that were available and by services that existed.
Mm.
So we thought, why not create something to sort of fill that gap? So yeah, the project, it is really looking to foster a really sort of supportive community and provide online content and resources that empower people to advocate in their own unique way using their own unique lived experience. So really what's at the sort of like heart of the project that we're doing is storytelling and lived experience and how important that is to, connecting with community and advocating for yourself. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Now, it's an initiative all about the LGBTIQ plus health, I suppose, as well, and the way of collaborating people's stories and I suppose the idea is people to share. And I think that's something that we love to do in the LGBTIQ community is talk. You know, we're good at talking. You know, when we start breaking down and not talking, it changes that dynamic considerably and also the need. So, for instance, like if I'm out and about and I'm working a bar or a club or something similar to that, if you have someone that doesn't talk, you find that they're usually recluse, right? They're in the corner, but you think to yourself, well, are they normally like that, or is there something going on in their life? And for many part of my job as being an entertainer or a drag queen, and not that I say that very often on this program, but is the fact is that I, because I'm a nobody, I can sit next to somebody and they can tell me anything they want to tell me. It's up to them, and then they will start to share. So, you know, if they're going through struggles or they're, you know, having a shit time with their family or friends, boyfriends, love interests. Oh, my God, how many conversations I've had about love interests. Or even where they're sitting on the fence. And I always say we're a little bit like a foreign country. You know, you've got one on one side and one on the other, and, you know, there's a fence in the middle. And I think sometimes life can be a little bit on that. You know, you can be almost not necessarily from one country, but you can be seen as one person, but you're terrified that if you jump that fence, how you'll be looked at on the other side. And there's so many people that sit on that fence with you, staring at you and make life hard. And so sharing stories is a really important thing, because the least you can give a person by listening is an ear, you know, a way for them to let it out, and then hopefully tomorrow they'll just tell someone a little bit more and eventually undo that ball that's been wound up so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Health is like that. Because it's not just mental health, it's physical health, it's all different health, but you've got to share the story. And that's sort of what the website does, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel it's that analogy that you used is sort of, you know, there's the two sides of the fence, and, you know, you might be sort of like sitting on the fence and really like not sure which way to go or how to share or yeah, which parts of yourself to reveal or when to be vulnerable. I'm so glad that you sort of brought that up and made that analogy, because it's something that we hear a lot from particularly people with disability who are also part of LGBTIQ plus communities, is that, you know, there's this experience of, you know, among other disabled people, or when you're accessing disability services, it's, you have to like come out in a sense, and there's this real like fear of experiencing stigma or negativity about your gender or your sexuality or your body as it sort of relates to the experience of being part of LGBTQ plus communities. Yeah. And then on the other sort of flip side of that, being in queer spaces, it's particularly for people with sort of invisible disabilities, but visible ones as well, it's either I have to like come out in a different sense about being disabled or having an invisible disability, or it's sort of quite plain to see. And then there's that experience of sort of like ableism and really just like not being able to find a space to be your whole self. And then in sort of a general community being like, well, I'm dealing with it all. So yeah, I feel like that resonates quite a lot.
It does. And I tell you what, you just triggered something in my brain, and oh, God help us where this is going to go. But I remember having a young man that I used to teach in one of my programs some years back, and he was a very frivolous, fruity, fantastic person. You know,
that was some great alliteration.
I know.
That's a good story title.
It's fantastic. And he's
just fruity and fantastic.
You know, aren't they all wonderful words that you just go, oh, yeah, I know someone like that. And he was like that. But he come from a very strict family. I can't remember if they were Italian or what they were, but a very strict family.
Can relate. Yeah. I'm Greek.
Oh, can you? Or Greek? Well,
yeah, I've got the family pictured in my head.
That was going to be my second choice. All right. And I just remember we were like, look, he's so gay. You know, he's beautifully gay, but because he had a disability, and you know, he was, I would say he's probably like a 2-on-1, and that's the way I rate people, is sort of like, you know, he needed some support but wasn't like wheelchair bound type of thing. And not being judgy or anything like that, but, you know, that's the way you sort of got to look at it in my world. And so he was, you know, he was just beautiful, and I knew that all he wanted to do was have a boyfriend. You know, that was his whole life. And when I first brought it up, I said, you know, he's very capable of having a partner. You know, there is, or at least have friends that he can relate to and love and just be fruity and wonderful. And he loves stealing my hats and my wigs and anything else he could get his hands on. It was like, oh, you know, but the answer literally was from the other staff at that time. They're like, it will never happen, Sandy. So don't go there. It will never happen. And
can I say why?
Well, I think because the family was so strict, and his whole life was inner control. So his life was controlled from his routine. You know, I do this and this and this, and this is how I get through life. And really his choices, even though you would like to say he has choice and control, well, he did when he was in program, but when it came outside of that program, he had very little choice and control. Family, well, you come from a Greek family, you know, you've got to be there for your Sunday roast and souvlaki on a Wednesday, and you've got to kiss mum three times and the whole story. It's very hard. And you're able and willing, and you're very lucky because you're able to get out there and experience the world, but that doesn't always resonate for these clients. And it's a hard world. You know, I think generally we will break it down. I think, I believe in all my faith that we will break it down, and eventually everyone will get someone, you know, where they stand. But in this case, it's not. But this is something that perhaps they could head to the website, ourvoices.org.au, and say, for instance, if he had a family member or a brother that perhaps didn't have a disability, would be able to read and say, look, do you know what your rights are? Do you know that you're actually able to come out and be a human person and say, I'm gay? Even, you know, and I don't think he ever would never be able to do that himself. And would anyone around him know what his rights are?
Yeah. There's a good chance that they wouldn't. And, I mean, when we developed the website and created the website, we did really do it with LGBTIQ plus people with disability in mind as the audience. It's like, this is a website that we're creating for community. Yeah. It wasn't really designed with sort of supporters or family members or carers in mind. We had a brilliant, amazing, incredible co-design group of queer disabled people, and they really, like, this project in a lot of ways really belongs to them. Very eternally grateful for our co-design group.
Look, you open it up, and the visuals and the cartoon caricature things, I don't know how you describe it, but visuals, I suppose, like, they're vibrant and they're beautiful, and it's simple. You have two buttons at the bottom, and you go top one or bottom one, and whatever journey you want to take yourself on is where you end up.
Absolutely. And I'm really glad you said that, because that's kind of how we designed it. We, you know, there's like choose your own adventure books way back when. That was kind of the concept that we had in mind when we were creating the website. It's like, well, we're not going to tell people, you know, you need to start at this point A and end up at this point B. Mm. It's really like you navigate the website based on what you're interested in and what you want to know more about and what's important to you. I'm glad that comes through. Mm. It's really nice to hear.
Yeah, it is. Look, so to give people the idea that are listening, you know, right across Australia, is that you basically have two choices. One will send you through a series of videos and pictures, and sort of like it's very interactive, very simple, but beautifully designed. It's black. The website's black, but you can change the colour, you can change the font, you can put it over to easy language, so it's simple and just basic, gives you lots of pictures. So it's great. Even if you're not a reader, you've got someone and you say, I can hear you well, Sandy, but I can't read. Well, even you can pretty much get through it, even without being able to read hard, you know, full on text, I suppose, which a lot of these websites are all about now.
And it's pretty text heavy, yeah.
Then it gives you four areas. So it gives you our rights. So it tells you about your rights. What are your rights? Intersectionality and intersectionality.
Yeah, a mouthful of a word.
Oh, gosh, too much. And then advocacy. So a lot of people don't realise that, you know, there are so many advocacy services out there, but you don't know where to go. And I know this because I do advocacy for the community. Yeah. And so advocating, you can make, you know, what to do to make a complaint. Making a complaint is one of the most important things you can do. I even tell my own participants, you know, we have a small adult group, and one of them is on my side of the fence, and when they complain, I say, look, I might be the manager here, but at the end of the day, don't complain to me. Go online and make a complaint, because then they will have to look at it. I will always listen to you. I will always put in your complaint for you. But I want you to know that you have the power to make a proper complaint that you're unhappy about something.
And absolutely.
It gets you that way of getting it out and about. And a lot of people, they go, oh, you know, like, oh, this girl turns up and she doesn't do nothing with me, she doesn't take me nowhere and I don't go anywhere. And I go, but, you know, all right, yes, I can give you a wonderful worker and I can get you out of that service, but at the end of the day, make a complaint so they know that they're terrible at what they do. You know,
yeah.
Otherwise, you just leave them, and you know, as much as it, you know, I'd love to look after you, but the whole thing is, you know, you need to tell them that they're terrible at their job, so you can get it fixed, and then if they don't fix it, come to me, and then I'll tell them that they're terrible at their job.
Yeah, because I think that's the thing as well. If you do that, and as in, if you don't make a complaint, and you sort of just find a new support worker or a new service or whatever it is, it just means that the next person is going to end up,
it's the same thing,
with that
kind
of not up to standard service.
That's right.
So so making a complaint is so important for,
and a lot of it
the
is
individual, but also for the community generally.
Yeah, people get waltzed in these doors. I've heard of stories of disability services tapping on their front door saying, I've noticed you're in a wheelchair, do you have NDIS service? And then basically, you know, whisk them into a bus and off they go, and you think, I hope they come back one day. And I know this is happening, right? There's so many out there fighting like lions in a den. And I say, I don't want to take you for your money. I want you to be part of my world so I can love you and we can experience the world together. And even though I'm the boss, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to turn up at your house and ask how you're going and what you're doing. And, you know, if I'm going to invest you into my world, I want to make sure you're getting the best out of yours. And that all comes down to, you know, being with the right people and doing the right thing, but also saying, you know, this is not working for me. And, you know, you can't give a person what they can't have. And, you know, it's important. Now, there's also burnout. That's my rant, Hora. Burnout and self-care is another really important thing too. I find in the LGBT community, we try so much harder. And I'm an old person. You know, I'm not old, but I'm older. And I think what happens is we try so hard sometimes to be gay, to fit into our gay world, that you actually burn far more energy trying to be authentic. Does that make sense?
I think when you're doing, absolutely. And I think when you're, you know, doing that and you also have a disability, you've got...
I know.
Less energy to burn.
That's right. You know, you could spend days, you know, sort of trapped because your whole body's falling apart, for instance, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, all I really want to do is just go out and go to the library and meet my friend or something like that, but my body just tells me I can't do it today.
Yeah.
So then you can imagine then that ordeal of then being, you know, all right, but I want to go out and I want to wear bright pink and blue shoes and orange hair and I want to, you know, feel like I'm part of my world.
Mm.
That takes a hell of a lot more energy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
So there's advice there. Service and systems is another area. What's the services and systems? How does that get into it?
Yeah, so there's some resources in there on the NDIS and sort of like accessing the NDIS and what you can the sort of whole process from beginning to getting a plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, specifically kind of delves back a little bit back into like what are your rights here, but like what you can do with your NDIS plan and how you can build it to make sure that it's supporting your goal of living authentically as someone from LGBTIQ plus communities and connecting with your community if that's something that you want. Obviously it's very personal to the individual, but
of course it is.
If that's something that you want, if that's something that's important to you, it's absolutely something that you can build into your NDIS plan and have as a goal of your NDIS plan. So that was sort of really important for us to be really clear on So there's that, and then there's also some resources on sort of like finding an inclusive and affirming service. Yes, whether that's a health service or a support service or whatever it is. A bit of like a checklist and some sort of tips and tricks for how to, look and what to look out for when you're accessing a service, and questions you can ask to make sure that they're affirming.
I know that, you know, I don't want to dog every service because it's not fair. But I'm sure because you've been in this project, you've seen, you know, a whole lot of conversations and how people have been treated in different ways and their story and the way it works. There is a lot of services out there that really do want to support GLBTIQ specific supports. And I know that they can learn, you know, like as far as being an NDIS provider, I mean, you're basically, it's part of the rules. Everyone has to be inclusive and you have to be fair and understood. But there are differences between services on really what their beliefs are to what they provide can be very diversive. Is there a way that services themselves can, like, for instance, now I know with my service we're very open and honest and full on, there's no hold barred with us, but like if I wanted to get part of our voices and sort of say, look, I want to try and support the community, is there a way of us being a part of that as well?
So this specific project wasn't really developed for sort of like services or the workforce. There's definitely, I think, information on the site that could help a service be more inclusive.
Right.
Not explicitly, but I think even just sort of like reading through the information and knowing what LGBTQ plus people with disability, like what their rights are, is a bit of a like blueprint for what you need to be doing
Of course.
To make sure that your service is inclusive and accessible. But I think in terms of the best way for any service to really be doing the best that they can to be inclusive and affirming, my like first thing that I would say is like find out what sort of LGBTIQ plus community controlled organizations exist where you're providing services. So like if you're in New South Wales, ACON, for example, if you're in Victoria, Thorn Harbour Health, like there's a sort of range of organizations.
Yeah, there are.
Really the best place to go.
That's right. I mean, you know, in each state there is basically a rainbow service there, right? In which, you know, they do, I know ACON in Sydney do a hell of a lot. I mean, I know I've raised enough money for them over the years, I should know. but also, I know down in Victoria, as you say, or even in Taz, I know Taz.
Yeah, Taz working it out.
I've even been down to Taz and done some fundraising for them down there as well. So it's like there are services out there, but you're right. I think this is a good space for a service provider, or if you work in the industry, go on there. You know, like there's no your fingers are not going to burn in hell if you click on a couple of buttons. Although your family could maybe thinking twice. But there is a whole lot. Now, the whole story is our story, storytelling. To me, this was similar to a journey that I would expect in an Indigenous pathway, because it's all about Indigenous love to part of Indigenous culture is about storytelling, and it's about sharing the story of Earth and, you know, caring and loving and all that stuff. So to me, this was sort of fitted into that, but only it's a different way. It's a toolkit resource to help you basically communicate about advocacy and storytelling journey and all that stuff. Explain to me how that works.
How the toolkit works?
Yeah,
of course. So the toolkit sort of split up into three sections, and each section has a bunch of information in a variety of different ways. We've got some short videos that feature LGBTQ plus people with disabilities sort of sharing their tips, their experiences, their the way that they share their stories and what they do. And then there's sort of written information, and then there's resources and tools and, you know, sort of like worksheets that you can do for yourself and fill out. And the first part of the toolkit is really on sort of like getting started and, you know, figuring out what you want to say and working out what's important to you. That real sort of like starting point. The second part is about using your voice for advocacy. And when we talk about voice, it's in a very sort of conceptual, very non-literal way. We don't mean your literal speaking voice, because it's not the only way that people communicate. It's really about your voice in terms of your message and what you want to say. So that second part of the toolkit is about that, and there's a bit on there around sort of like mental health and boundaries and knowing what you want to share and when you want to share it and in what setting, because that can change. And then the third part of the toolkit is some more sort of like practical, here's how you get started, but in the sense of like, I've kind of figured out what I want to say and what's important to me, and I know what my boundaries are, and I know what my message is, so how do I get it out there?
It's an amazing toolkit just to think about your story, but also you can think about your future. You can think about the way you are around you at the moment. You can think about your past and how you may want to reset it a little bit so you can flourish a bit further. Sometimes you've got to bury some of that old shit, as I say, and move on a little bit further. And it's also a great toolkit to be able to talk to the people around you and the supports and the resources and really be authentic to who you are. I think it's an absolute amazing website. I really do.
Thank you.
I couldn't be more chuffed and sort of proud in the same time to see that there are people that have been working on this that have got disabilities, but they're also going to be talking to professionals so they also learn from it as well. There's a whole bag. How many people were actually all behind this whole project? Was there a whole, obviously, a lot of you? There's a lot of work.
There are a lot of people behind the project in a lot of different areas. So at LHA, there's two of us. At NIDA, the National Ethnic Disability Alliance, there was also another couple of people working there. But then we just had such an amazing sort of support team around us. Great web design agency, a great, great sort of like filmmaking storytelling agency that helped us pull all of this together as well. And like I said, the co-design team who really have been such an important and integral part of getting this work developed. And there were about 10 people across the whole project who co-designed it with us.
I think so it's fantastic. It really is. And as I said, all you simply need to do is just go to ourvoices.org.au and pretty much you can walk your way through the whole thing. It is initiative by LGBTIQ plus Health Australia, which you're from, and you guys do a lot of work in this type of area. What's some of the other stuff that you do with them?
Me personally, or just the organisation?
Well, the organisation even,
For me, really, I've been at LHA for 2.5 years now, and really just on this project. This has been my bread and butter for the last couple of years. But it's been a really excellent project to work on. But we also have other projects around aging and age care, so older LGBTI people, We have a palliative care project that's just wrapping up now. And we also do work in sort of like the mental health and suicide prevention space, digital health, policy and research.
Yeah,
we have quite a few things that we're
quite a busy little lot, aren't you? Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm getting the sweats just listening to it. It's there's so many areas.
We have a very dedicated and passionate team, which is nice.
Any way that, of course, you want to spread your beautiful messages across Australia from all our listeners way up in the north of the territory that listen in each and every week and send me beautiful emails, or over in Western Australia. This is something for you, no matter where you are or who you are, whether you're a brother or a sister or a mother or a daughter or whoever you are, then, you know, definitely get onto this. And, of course, the National Ethnic Disability Alliance is also part of this as well, which is wonderful. Yeah. We would love to get any of the messages out there and talk more about it, but unfortunately we're sort of running out of time. I absolutely treasure every moment that we've had tonight talking about this wonderful.
So wonderful to chat.
And I want to hear more about, especially that suicide prevention stuff, you know.
We can definitely have a bit of a chat about that.
Oh, look, anything we can do to save all of us to live in this world in harmony, but also to get our mental connection happening up there as well, and, you know, stop kids jumping off bridges, especially, then it's really important for me. So
yeah,
it's been amazing having you on the program, and I do thank you, Catherine, or Kat, as
thank
we like
you
to call you.
So
sorry
much.
To call you by your whole name. It's shocking.
Yeah, the government name.
The bastards. But either way, Kat, thank you so much for joining us. And
thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure being able to chat about this project. And I will just add very quickly, if it's okay.
Yes, please.
We've got our project website, so ourvoices.org.au. But the project is also on Instagram.
Okay.
Our Voices, Our Way.
Okay.
And there's a whole bunch of stuff on there. And
cool.
We also really want to hear from...
Yeah.
The community, if you have a story that you want to share,
please
be sure to tag us in it. We really want to hear from
that's it. You want to see people, you know, blurt it out, but tell their story, but also let these guys know that they have been there, and that the people are appreciating the wonderful work they're doing. And if people don't tell their story, then what happens is we look at it and go, it was a nice project, but it wasn't really successful. The only way you know that something's successful is when people start saying, this is amazing, but also start sharing their story so other people can learn from it. Really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us a follow at Our Voices, Our Way.
ablechat.com.au.
Oh, well, it's great to have you. Welcome back to Able Chat. I don't know what that was all about, but not to worry. It's great to have you back here on the station here at Able Chat, in which we do talk about disabilities, and we talk about a whole lot of events that are happening in our space. And there is never a dull moment, especially when you're working right around the country and you're putting stuff together. And I love when productions come and they sort of let me know what's on, especially when it is in the disability space, because there is no easy space in the disability space, but not necessarily just even focus on disability. Now, I've got the lovely Madeline Stewart. Now, she is all part of a wonderful production, which is going to be at the Riverside Parramatta. And I'm not sure where else. I'm sure there's a whole list of places. You've got to forgive me, Madeline. Are you there?
Yes. There are plenty of places we're going. We're going nationally, all over Australia.
I thought you might have been, and it's my fault for not doing my homework enough, all right? So smack me on the bottom, all right? But I know that this is an amazing production. Are You Pulling My Leg? And you give us a bit of a rundown. It's best coming from you, because you know what it's all about, and I'm excited.
Well, Are You Pulling My Leg is a comedy show featuring all disabled comedians, and it's also accessible. So there's captioning and Auslan interpreting, and in wheelchair accessible spaces. But I think the show's wonderful because I don't know about you, but come comedy time, like whether there's festivals or people in town, I never know who to see. So I love shows that just have a little taster of all these different comedians.
You like
it. And I think that's what's great about my show.
Like a big gala, isn't it? A big gala event, you know, like you see on Channel 10 late at night where they've got those galas. It's like,
yeah, it's exactly like that.
Yeah, you're getting the best of the best all under one roof. And you know what is really hard? And I know, to be honest, the theatres, Parramatta Theatre and also Penrith Theatre, they do a great job to try and make events inclusive, right? But the whole thing is, to throw an inclusive event is not as easy said than done, because number one, you've got to consider space, you've got to consider entry, you've got to consider lighting, you've got to consider a whole lot of stuff. But then very often you're actually being entertained with any people with disabilities. So that makes it even more exciting. And I think this is where you're involved. Now, you're obviously a comedian yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then how did you get into doing comedy? What's your little, spill? How did you go about it?
Well, I started comedy maybe 15 years ago. I started when I was a teenager because I met Adam Hills. He came to my hometown of Campbelltown. And I for the first time I saw someone like me on stage with power. People weren't looking at him like they felt sorry for him. And I thought, oh, I want a bit of that. And so I talked to him afterwards, and he was very encouraging, and he's still in touch to this day, and he's a big supporter.
I think
he's an absolute sweetheart.
He's amazing.
But you're totally right, what you were saying before about how access is never easy.
Yeah.
And I think I hope by touring we can kind of show people, one, that there's a place for us on stage as well as in the audience. But also we like to train every venue we go to. We're in collaboration with Accessible Arts, and we train every venue so we can keep a future that is accessible and more venues are trained in disability access and, things like that.
I'm very lucky too. I mean, I travel right around Australia doing different shows and sort of, I'm always the host, that's sort of part of the gig. But the whole thing is that I look at some of the new venues that have upgraded, that have rebuilt themselves basically and upgrade them, and they've got ramps in now and they've got like different levels and lifts and things like that. And you look at how well they work, because you get people with wheelchairs coming in. I meet people from the middle of Whoop Whoop, that have travelled for miles in their with their wheelchair in the car, and then they roll up and you're like, oh, finally, you're able to be part of what we share, and it makes you so good. But there are also old venues which don't have that access and a sort of the opposite. How do you get around a venue that's like am I allowed to say it? What time is it? 7:25. Shitty. How do you get around a shitty venue?
Well, we don't. We only tour to venues that are accessible to us. And I think that's part of the show. We're like, if you're going to buy our show, you need to make a commitment to accessibility. But also, you speak to any comedian on our lineup, we've all got a story about how we've been to venues, whether it be for festivals or, just little gigs down the pub that is completely inaccessible to us. And, it's really starting to be quite annoying. And, a lot of comedians all over the country are starting to get a bit cross and making a stance, and, all the power to us, we should make a fuss.
I agree with you.
We're brilliant performers.
I've spent the last 40 years wearing high heels, and I tell you, some of those stages that I've stood on in my life, I think to myself, I don't know if I'm going to make it before the end of the act. It's, and that's wearing high heels. That's before I take into consideration I could be missing limbs, or I could have, neurological conditions, which makes it hard on my feet. There's a whole lot of stuff. How does it affect you? Without me prying, I don't really want to pry in your disability, but considering we were on the topic and it's a disability show, I might as well go for the hard question, mightn't I?
I mean, go for it. I feel like I'm very privileged because I'm missing my left hand and forearm, for those of you at home.
Oh.
And I guess I'm lucky in that the only thing really that is an issue in the space is the microphone stand. I need to make sure that's to my level.
Yep.
But also, I think mostly just kind of attitudinal, maybe financial barriers for me.
Mm.
But a lot of people on my lineup, you know, just something simple like I need a stool on stage because I can't stand very long.
Or
another one of our acts actually told me that when he was younger, he used to dump his wheelchair at the bottom of the stairs
on
his way up. And that's how he got into his workplace.
Yeah.
And sometimes the stages aren't even accessible. You're doing your set in the audience.
Yeah.
And those kind of horror stories that are still very much happening nowadays, especially in the comedy world, there's always upstairs or downstairs or in a pub somewhere.
Mm.
I think it's something worth talking about, because if we wonder why there's not more people with disability in comedy or the creative arts, I mean, look at the venues that house them.
Yes, you're quite right. Some of the big theatres I've worked in, you need stairs to go up to the stage, and then there is literally no way down. Even I mean, I've struggled quite often. I will take off my heels and wear my sneakers up, and then have all my high heels lined up on the side of the stage and climb into them before I walk out onto the floor, because there is, you know, I mean, they're a death trap even for high heels. So imagine, you know, if you've, you know, you've got one hand. So, all right, that's it. I've got a wonderful client who I would adore you to meet one day, because she's amazing, but she's a one-hander too, right? And so I know her biggest struggles are getting into a car on the wrong side, because she relies on the other hand to lift herself in, and also some stairs, because they only have the rails on one side.
Oh, yeah.
So, and you probably don't even realise it, because you've gone
I've been there.
Yeah, and you're like, you're thinking, oh, it's a bit unsteady. Those stairs are a bit small, for instance, right? So what choice do you have? You've got to walk up sideways and sort of try and winch your way up, or walk up backwards, because you need the safety of the rail to get where you need to be. And so I don't think people even think of these small little things that make a lot of difference.
I also think you had a great example with the heels. You know, not all access issues are disability related.
No.
Everybody has access needs, things that could be changed to help us work the best that we can.
Yeah.
So it's not just a disability thing.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you cover, obviously, a lot of territory. How long do you all have on stage together?
Well, none of us do a gig all together. I don't think all of us appear on the stage at once. It's more of a gala lineup.
Oh, like a gala. Sorry, are you doing like 5 minutes, 10 minutes? How does that work? Yeah.
So I'm the lovely host. Mm. I make sure everybody's comfortable. It's the best job. I love it.
She's the Madame Patissier.
So my acts do 10 minute spots, and then the headliner, who at Riverside will be Beck Charlwood. Does about 20.
Wow.
So you get a good, decent chunk of each of the performers. You get a real bang for your buck.
Now, as a comedian, when I pull it back, because where I was going with this, say, all right, you got to fill a 10-minute spot. I mean, you're on all night, right? You do what I do, basically go in and you do your little own spot, but it's like part of the whole evening. You pull it together, which is sort of, you know, my job, I suppose. You know, I'm a drag queen, but I don't sit there and mime all night. I sing a song and I get the crowd entering and talk and laugh and make everyone giggle in between. Now, in your world, though, like, how do you come up with the material? Does a comedian always run with the same material, or do they do what I do and feel you've got some standards, but then you build on that with where you are and what you're doing, and what's your process behind being a wonderful comedian?
Well, personally, I think it's similar to what you were saying, the second version, where you have your standard material bits, you have your chunks that you usually like to do, that you know it's, you know, tried and tested, but you know, you'd be a fool to ignore the audience.
Yeah.
I'd love to get to know who's in the audience, and I mean, not in a horrible way. Certainly not one of the comedians who pick on the audience.
No.
But like, you know, you go with what the audience feels. You know, we're all human beings in the same space. You know, it takes anything from, you know, bad weather to an air conditioner being too hot or too cold. You know, it all affects an audience. It's like a fragile little ecosystem. But I love the challenge and I love that kind of work.
Yeah.
But when it comes to writing jokes, I guess I would say it all comes from lived experience. Not one thing that I say on stage didn't happen to me in real life. Like, it's all happened to me. And I'm one of those lucky people where I just meet the most unusual people, and I'm always the subject of the most unusual things.
It's like the satire of life, isn't it? When you're a comedian, you know, comedy is, it's like you take a moment from your life and then you turn it around as a story, but then you realise how ridiculous that story will be, which makes it so funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think it's a great life to live whenever anything, you know, particularly embarrassing or horrible happens. I think, well, this is great humour. This is great material for the show. You know, you can't get too sad, can you?
No. Well, you can't. There's no point looking at yourself in a dowdy stick. You know, it's you got to laugh at yourself a little bit too.
100%.
Do you find yourself now, because you've lived with your disability all your life, I suppose, I didn't ask that question, but I imagine
yes,
so.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
You're right to assume.
I feel like you're a psychologist right now. It's getting a bit
deep.
Oh,
no, go for it. I don't mind.
So, obviously, you must use some material that's based on your experience as well. Do you find that a lot of the comedians that are doing the events with you, do you find that a lot of the stories are drawn from disabilities, or have they tried to, like, go, well, yeah, that's just life, get over it? How do you think it works?
I'm so glad you asked that question because I found it very interesting, because I have so many different, I mean, every single town we go to is a different lineup. I mean, some are, you know, reoccurring comedians, but I like to mix it around a bit and, you know, offer opportunity to even emerging artists and things like that. But I've found, looking at everybody's material, sure, it comes through a lens of disability. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about what our disabilities are and how it affects our life, but a lot of the material is just the same as anybody
else. It's just a normal material.
We're all talking about, we're talking about parenting, talking about dating, we're talking about the government, we're talking about lots and lots and lots of things, not necessarily disability content. I think it's human content. We're all human beings and we're sharing our experiences.
Yeah.
But I think it's so interesting through a disability lens.
Oh, I agree. Like, you look at the world completely different and you go sort of, oh, okay, all right, this is my view on the world and this is their view on the world and, yeah, this is how it all comes together. And, yeah, I wasn't sure whether you would get, like, because, you know, comedians would feel that, you know, coming to an event like this, they would go, oh, well, I'm going to pull out my, you know, my one-legged jokes and I'm going to, you know, and then I thought, yeah, I wonder whether they like, no. We might have a disability here, but we're not doing the standard bastard jokes. We're actually going the whole way and we're going to do our job like a comedian and talk about anything we want to talk about.
Yeah, it depends on the artist. Some people do like to talk about their disability experiences and other people don't. And, you know, I think it's up to them and what they feel like on the night as well.
Of course, yeah, you got to go with the flow. I know because I've worked at theatres where you had a morning, a first, you know, show and then a second late night show. And then you look at the crowd by the second late night show and you go, geez, I'm not going to use that same lines again because this group's completely drunk and the ones before are almost asleep. So I've got to, you know, come up with something fresh.
You pick on the audience. You see what they're like.
Yeah, of course you do. Got to read your crowd before you walk in.
100%.
And there is nothing worse than, you know, doing half an hour of wheelchair jokes when half your room, everyone's in wheelchairs. I think they'd be pretty much over it by the end of it.
Exactly.
I love the fact that you used Adam Hill as your inspiration because, let's face it, like, he is an amazing, accomplished artist within himself. Like, he through UK with his programs, and now he's back doing his show here in Australia again with the trivia show.
Spicks and
Specs. That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And how can you not love him? He really does shine, but makes a joke about his disability. Like, it's not about his disability, but he'll just, like, occasionally pull off the leg and put it on the table, or, you know, when it's referencing that. How do you go about that when you're put in that situation? Have you got a fall for, like, standard, well, all right, here we go, I'm going to go for the disability plug, what am I going to do?
Well, I think it's different for Adam and I, because he wears a prosthetic leg, so he could enter the stage and not really need to talk about disability. Mm. Also, he is so famous that he doesn't always have to talk about disability.
True.
When I enter a space, I have one arm, I don't wear a prosthetic.
No.
People are so curious, I have to talk about it straight away.
You have
People get very uncomfortable. I need to almost reassure everyone, I know I have one arm and I'm okay.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
And that's part of the inspiration of the show, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the show, we hope that we mostly inspire people to you know, push for more access in their theatres, but also maybe, like, even write in and say we want more of this in our local theatres, but also maybe to give comedy a go, to know that there's a space for you. Disabled or not, like, you're welcome to come in and join the group. If you want to give something a go, give it a go.
Yeah.
I'm very nervous talking about inspiration, because it's such a, you know, hit and miss thing with people with disability. It can be positive and negative.
But true.
I think as long as people are inspired by the right things, that's what I care about.
Well, it's about believing in themselves, isn't it? It's about believing in themselves. Look, I always say, you know, I could turn around tomorrow and say that I want to become a famous movie star, right? Because when we're little kids, we're all told that what are you going to be when you grow up? All right.
And you can be anything.
You can be anything. And everyone's happy with that. They go, oh, yeah, all right, okay, we'll see what happens. You know, and then end up a plumber or something, you know, and you go a completely different direction. But the whole thing is, if you don't believe in it when you're a child, right, your whole world comes down, because that's what you believe in. When you become an adult, you're forced to believe in things to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And especially when you have a disability, you're like, well, you're never going to become a hand model, are you? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about representation as well. It's like, what are you capable of? And also, where are you represented? If I wasn't going to do comedy, I was going to be an opera singer. Mm. But I never saw any disabled opera singers, even to this day. I don't think I've ever seen a disabled opera singer.
I'm with you. Let's find one.
I thought comedy must be the place for me, because there are people like me there. I'm sure I could have a career there. And I think that's also why we love to tour regionally. Yeah. We want to show people that you can do this. Like, come along. Give it a go.
Yeah. I'm all for regional. I've travelled to country towns that people can't even believe that a drag queen would ever go to. And
you're much braver than me.
And it's a lot harder when you're in a redneck town and you're the only girl. But the whole thing is, when you come out the other end and you have people smile and laugh and go, oh, I don't like Poofs, but I really liked her. She was quite funny, you know. And it's the sort of the same too. It's like, you can come into a venue, I suppose, with a disability and go, oh, yeah, I didn't realise that, you know. Oh, okay. But they're really, really funny, and they're really, really clever. Mm. And the whole fact is, we can go there and we can see this. It makes it, you know, you're doing something that's absolutely amazing, really. What are some of the places you're going to?
Oh, well, so far we've been to Brisbane, and we've been to, you know, some really cute little places. But on the way, I think coming up next is Darwin.
Oh,
and
Darwin.
We're also going to, we're going to Bondi, and we're going to Riverside Theatre from Parramatta.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're also going to places like Karratha, which is a mining town in Western Australia.
Wow.
We're going to Tamworth, and we're going all over the place.
Have you got a country outfit for Tamworth?
Oh, you better believe I do. I've got a bedazzled little cowgirl top.
I was going to say.
I'm ready to go.
Yeah, if you haven't got that fringe, you're not getting in.
You need tassels and fringe to get in anywhere in Tamworth. You've got to wear your boots and your hat.
Oh, that's exciting. So you're going all the way across to a mining town.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if you go on the Arts on Tour website, is the person who looks after us, or you can Google, are you pulling my leg? You'll see all the dates and all the places and links to buying tickets. It's a good tour. I'm very excited.
And so you're going across, you're doing all of them. You're
I'm the host.
You're the
host.
Host
all of them.
So you're lucky, aren't you?
I'm very lucky.
You're a spoiled girl. I am loving it.
Well, I made the show, so I think I deserve to at least host it.
I think that's fair enough. It's
fair.
Give me some of the artists that will be in. Well, I suppose the local. Well, I mean, we're going Australia wide, so this program will go right around Australia. We've got friends up in West Australia that ride into us all the time. But you're also going up to the Blue Mountains Theatre in Springwood. So you're up in the mountains. I didn't even know there was a theatre up there. So there, I'm a little bit.
There absolutely is. I'm ready.
The Bondi Pavilion. Well, that's a bit bougie. I hope you've got bougie outfit for that one. There's Red Earth Arts Precedent in Karratha. Okay, that's Capital Theatre in Tamworth. I think it's amazing. So in the Sydney one, Riverside's on the 20th of July. That's your next. Oh, well, this 15th of June. 15th. Yeah. Did we miss June? We're in June. We're in July now. We missed June.
Yeah, yeah.
It just shows you how far behind I am. Okay.
It's okay. Yeah, I think the one in Riverside and Parramatta is the 20th of July.
The 20th of July. So who you got lined up for? The Riverside Theatre one.
Oh, I have Beck Charlwood as our headliner.
Yeah.
We also have an incredible comedian, Jamal Abdul.
I know that name.
Lovely Jamal Abdul. He is incredible. His jokes are absolutely killer.
Yeah.
And we also have a married couple on, Sam Wade, who I could only describe as like a disgraced lounge singer. One of those guys who wear velvet suits, you know.
Oh, fantastic.
And his wife, Irene, who sings, and I'm telling you the truth, she sings the dirtiest songs I've ever heard in my life, and they are so catchy. You find yourself humming and singing along in the grocery store, and you think, oh my gosh, I shouldn't be singing these songs.
Now, were these two part of the Melbourne Comedy Theatre as well? Did they do the Melbourne Comedy Theatre show last year?
I'm not quite sure what Sam and Irene have been up to,
I've got a feeling
they're pretty well travelled. They're all very established, all of the artists that are coming to Parramatta.
Yeah.
So it's a really good one. I wouldn't miss out on that.
Yeah, it's a real highlight, and I think you do a whole lot of stuff that's there. Now, I also noticed, like with the Arts on Tour, as you say, they do the accessible arts disability training. Do they go into every venue? Do they have like a team that goes into that? And obviously, you're working with them, but does that all fit?
Yeah. Accessible Arts is the company that does all the training, and they do it all online.
Oh.
They do, and any company can hire them to train their staff, volunteers. They have a whole range of training from, just everyday confidence training, and they also have marketing and producing and festival training, everything you could think of. And they've done it all online, except for Darwin. That's going to be an in-person.
Oh.
And I know this because I'm running the training.
You're going to have to do your homework, Madeline.
I will. I have to read up and practice my slideshow.
I want all those boxes ticked by the end of it.
If it's a bad show, I will be directly responsible for it.
I think it's wonderful you're getting involved in it. And I think also if you are a venue right across Australia, even if you're just a club, like a little club, a bowling club, or any of these venues, I mean, I go into some of these bowling clubs and I love them, right? right. They're not the big massive ones. I hate the big massive ones. I like the little the little one. You can get 150 in there and cozy, and it's like fun. But I know that a lot of these venues, they really struggle to fit into the mould of being accessible for people with disabilities. And it can be the smallest thing, you know. It doesn't. You don't have to spend millions of dollars to be accessible. You've just got to be smart. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and I really scream out to all those little venues, if you're a board member and you're on a local club board or something, definitely get involved with them, because, I mean, accessible arts really do support venues. And the good thing is, too, is when you get involved in these type of organisations, if your club doesn't have any money and you're struggling and you say, well, we can't afford to put in a ramp, then these type of organisations will help you go out and find the funding. You know, there are funding models for this. I mean, they're not going to do the work for you, but they're going to give you the right place to start.
But as you said, access doesn't always have to be expensive things. It can just be, you know, a better website with more information, or, you know, maybe you have a lower sensory day where the music isn't as loud. You know, little things like that, they're free.
Yeah. Turn down the goddamn football so I can actually hear myself think. That's my answer. Yeah.
Exactly.
And as you say, lighting, noise, a whole lot of stuff goes into it. And even smell can make a lot of difference too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. It really can send some little ones off if they go into a place that smells like popcorn. Before you know it, you've got 50 kids on a high. I know what it's like. Look, I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing, and I'm really excited for you, because I know how much work, well, I don't know, but I can imagine how much work you have put into making this happen, but also for being a wonderful comedian yourself, following your dreams and never letting anything get in the way. I'm just absolutely bemused, and I'm so proud of what you're doing. And I do,
Thank you so much.
Keep it up, because we need more people like you out there doing it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And I hope I see you at one of my shows, as long as you wear that beautiful red gown you were talking about.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
Yeah, but you've got to learn in this game, Madeline. If you're not getting paid, you don't wear it.
Oh, well, you know, we'll have to see what we can do about that.
I'm sure I can fit into a frock in the back of the cupboard somewhere just to, you know, just to say hello.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Across
for joining
Australia,
us.
You're listening to Able Chat Radio.
Thanks for listening to Able Chat Podcast. We'll have another episode in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.